Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm Fake Stack and Jacks. I'm Kamau. He's just Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us, I believe. S&P futures down 45. NASDAQ futures down 215. My Dow futures down 344. Somewhere between the time I went to bed after watching one of the baseball games and Maddie went to bed watching another baseball game, Trump decided he had corona. How the hell did he get it? How did he get a test result at midnight last night? Just out of curiosity. But he and the whiff both are testing positive. He didn't say when either, did he? Did the test came through? Or did he? Do we know?
I don't
know. Are we on here?
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I am asymptomatic today. How about you?
Yeah, me too. I'm asymptomatic, and I have to admit I was in a...
You're like all the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. I was in a crowded bar last night watching the Sox go through whatever strategy that was of Ricky Renteria's. I would have to look it up somewhere. I don't know where it came from, but I guess if it worked, it would have been brilliant.
I have no idea why they didn't have Dylan Cease lined up for that start.
I'm asking everybody, did they have I thought they had a decent third starter. I mean, and then you show up with... So the plan is to line up 15 pitchers. The minute the guy gives up a hit, you change? I don't know. Does that strategy ever work or what?
The other thing is, if you're planning a bullpen day, that's usually it's something done out of desperation. It's because you've had so too many games and you used up all of your pitchers. So that we know that wasn't the case. But in addition to that, what you're banking on, because you're probably going to go through six or seven pitchers if it goes well, you're banking on six or seven pitchers all being really good on the same day.
Yeah.
And I think the probability of that is low, especially when at least two of them are rookies.
This new, and I know... Before Mitty lands at me with both feet, it's all done according to the stats. When you see people do this, I mean, some of them, I know there's lefty specialists and things like that. I get that part. And I know some people really hit the other side better than the others. But when you put somebody in and he mows down like a guy, and it's the eighth inning, and you go, well, he's not, and he looks like he's King Kong. He's on his game. Well, you can't start the ninth with him, or you can't start the eighth with him because he's not the eighth inning guy. And you get the thought that, or what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to work our way through to a guy who's not on, or what are we doing here? I mean,
well, you know, in the case of a starting pitcher, they have a pretty good idea when he will run out of gas. You know the number of pitches a guy has thrown at some point, and as you've built up enough data, you're pretty darn sure that for a pitcher it could be 120 pitches. Some guy may have 120 in him before he's ready to roll. Another guy, you know, maybe he's rolling, maybe he's really hot and you can go higher than that. And some guys, especially nowadays when they aren't asked to throw much over 100 ever, they know that when you get to 110 or something like that, all of a sudden people start teeing them up. So I understand that, especially when you have really strong guys in the bullpen. But the thing to understand about most baseball statistics is it's sort of like card counting. You know what your probabilities are, and that really works well over the course of a season. But you're doing small sample in a playoffs. You're doing individual games in a playoff, and the law of large numbers may work for that game or it may work for tomorrow's game. So it sort of explains why Oakland hasn't had a lot of success in the postseason. They're kind of the ultimate in stats, and stats don't apply today. They only apply all season. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, if you're the best pitcher in the ninth inning with bags loaded and the guy batting is batting 200, it doesn't matter. He's either going to put one out there or he's not. You know, it's like there's only one of two outcomes. It gets down to, I mean, how many times have I pitched against who I got to the right guy and I figure, all right, I got this guy, and all of a sudden he hits a duck snort and lands where there's grass, and you sit there and go, how the hell did he do that? I mean, you never know. It is baseball. You know.
That reminds me, though, of one quibble I have with your conversation yesterday, because you sort of got into you started talking about OPS, and then you immediately shifted to on-base percentage. And those
that's because I made a mistake by saying OPS.
Well, getting on base is important. And so you may have a low batting average guy who gets on base more than somebody with a higher batting average who never walks. But the OPS part of it allows for power.
What about this part?
A lot of doubles and guys who hit a lot of home runs with the same on base percentage as guys who don't are more valuable.
When you were scribbling
that,
down,
that's why that's the indication of that stat. Is it also incorporates the fact that you're getting extra base hits, and extra base hits have a lot of value.
In
my world, the best hitters hit a lot of doubles. They'll hit home runs too, and they may hit a whole lot of home runs. But if you're hitting singles and home runs, you're probably up there hacking with a big swing, and I bet you the stats will show it in OPS. But on the other hand, guys who hit a lot of doubles are putting their bat in the ball consistently, and then if they have power, they're hitting it hard to the alleys and places like that.
Let the record reflect, while you were scribbling down your critique of me, I said, oops, OPS was not the right statistic.
Just memory. I still have memory a little bit.
I didn't mean OPS, I meant on base percentage.
Oh, okay. All right, no, I did miss that.
Yeah.
I did miss that because you outraged me. You inflamed me, and I get outraged on everything when I disagree nowadays.
Yes, well, that's
I am a man of 2020.
Absolutely. You got to be, your blood pressure has to spike. You got to take it down, or you got to at least take a shot or some beer or something.
I think the blood pressure meds are going to keep that from happening.
So I watched the whole game yesterday, and it sounds like you guys did too, and it was a five-hour game, so you definitely could have watched a chunk of it, I imagine. Did they say why Dylan Cease didn't pitch? I mean, was there a reason?
I think he pitched an inning the day before, but I would have held him back on that.
Yeah, me too.
I would have held him to start. Because I can't imagine that pitching an inning the day before wouldn't have allowed him to come off the bench and pitch two or three more today.
Oh, I don't think you can do that to a starter. I mean, there's no way the Cubs would pitch Lester an inning today and expect him to start tomorrow.
Maybe, but that could be true.
But when you win,
and the good news of yesterday is that the Cubs did not get eliminated.
They also didn't get any rain when they called the game 2 hours early.
That's not true. There was some rain.
I think they could have started. I had somebody made note of the fact that about the fifth inning they got a little downpour there.
There was a downpour.
No big deal. Play today.
There
gives me another game to watch.
There was a downpour about 3 o'clock, but it was only about 10 minutes, and then there was a downpour at 4 o'clock, and then there was a downpour at 4:45. Now they could have in a regular season game they 100% would have started on time, and they may have even played through a couple of the rains because it only rained for 10 minutes at a time, but there was about 3 patches of rain. But I applaud them for saying, hey, this is an elimination game. We're going to start you, Darvish. If it starts raining after the second inning and we have to pull our starter now, that's such a competitive disadvantage when there's 0% chance of rain on Friday. Let's just push it back a day. So I was actually for it.
Well, when you start planning like a six-hour time frame for a game, I guess you're right. But
well, the White Sox game was 5 hours.
I mean, downtown here, what time did I headed to the Adult Emporium at 4 o'clock, and I'm thinking the game would be over. It's been 3 hours, but then again, it might have been the fifth inning. Who knows?
That White Sox game, a 9-inning game, mind you, and really not that high scoring. I mean, 6-4 is not exactly like a 14-12 slugfest, for that to last almost 5 hours, I've never seen anything like it. It was that was the longest.
And that's with the new rule saying you can't change pitchers every other batter.
That doesn't do anybody. That does nothing.
Now, they still made a lot of pitching changes. So, you know, even though they were getting the three batters in, they made a lot of pitching changes. Yeah, I think they pulled the trigger too soon on Dunning. And, you know, I think anybody first time in the playoffs, I'll give them a little bit of slack saying you sort of have to figure out how it works. Playoff experience is a big deal. Let me put it this way. Playoff success experience is an even bigger deal.
Well, you
have to learn to navigate it a little bit because when you're in elimination games, you know, you probably have to manage a little bit differently. You have to react to things that you would never react to during the regular season.
Well, let's put it this way: if I brought in a different softball, a new softball pitcher that I thought had, you know, good stuff, but once in a while would walk a guy, and it was his only problem because he would be too deep, and you want to be deep, but if you're a little too deep, the last thing I do is put a guy in first base and load the bases before I brought the guy in. The last thing I do.
I agree. I raised an eyebrow at that too.
Your girlfriend was outraged at that.
It certainly didn't work.
Was he the third batter?
I think he was.
The pitcher faced.
At the time, I didn't think about it. But when Chief and I were talking about it this morning, I think he must have been.
So that may have been their way of getting rid of the third batter without. Expecting that pitching to him might cause more damage.
Well, the last thing you want to do at that point is put another guy on base, and you just did it.
Yeah, I know. I know. At the same time, if your pitcher can't throw the ball over the plate, and the next thing you're worried about is for him just throwing a BP fastball right down the middle, maybe you're saying, let's just get this guy out of here. This is the easiest, fastest way to do it. I don't know if that was the thinking, but it could have been, because I'm with you. I don't like loading up the base, especially you're bringing in a rookie. You know, those guys weren't ready for prime time. A couple of the young pitchers, you know, basically they just choked. They couldn't throw the ball over the plate. They couldn't throw the ball near the plate. And they looked like Tyler Chatwood his first year with the Cubs.
Yeah.
But part of me is like
where you know you're not going to be enticed to swing at a pitch 2 feet outside the zone.
No, but
unless you're Javier Baez,
right?
Yeah.
But part of me is like, you know, there is some strategy to first base is open, setting up the force out at all four bases, setting up the double play. You're a major league pitcher. Throw the damn ball over the plate. It shouldn't matter if the bases are loaded. Part of me agrees with the move.
Well, except these dudes, every one of these guys is all around the edges.
The White Sox weren't around the edge yesterday. They were 2 feet outside, like Kevin said. A lot of those pitches were not competitive at all.
They hit the bull, as they would say.
I mean, it's easy.
Yeah, but you know, the White Sox broadcast team has been on this all season long. That the idea of non-competitive strikes and how they change every at bat. I think they're really right on that. It's sort of like there's a lot of little nuanced things like that. Non-competitive strikes versus competitive strikes. You know, I think putting the bat on the ball versus not putting the bat on the ball. A lot of people will say an out's an out. What does it matter if you strike out? Well, I suppose if it's not a double play, yeah, that's a little better. But most of the time, there is such a thing as a productive out. If you advance a runner to third with one out, that's a productive out. It doesn't mean I don't like bunting very much because it gives up an out, but I do like guys who can hit behind the runner and advance them, and you're trying to get a base hit, but you're just trying to get a base hit in the right place so that if you make an out, the runner advances anyway. Those kinds of things I think are really important to playing really good baseball, sometimes that isn't discussed, and that's where that non-competitive strike comes into play. I think they're important, and they're probably underrated in terms of most baseball fans.
I probably watched 7 games in the last 3 days, and I have not seen a team as bad as the Cubs at the plate. Not seen a team at all.
Well, you didn't watch the Reds then, because they didn't score a single run.
I did not watch the Reds.
They played 22 innings and scored 0 runs.
Wow. It's a
13-inning game and a 9-inning game, both shutouts.
So the Twinkies, managed to lose 18 in a row.
The Reds pitcher, who's so good,
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah,
Bauer. watching Atlanta's approach with him was just awesome, because they just refused to swing at a breaking ball from him early in the count. They just didn't. They picked it up instead of not swinging. And so when he threw fastballs in the zone, they hit him. When he threw breaking balls, you know, look, you get to two strikes, you can easily get fooled by a pitch like that. But as soon as they recognized it, they said, you know, high probability that that's going to dive out of the strike zone. Don't be fooled.
You know, also that was
I was in awe of that discipline. I thought it was really cool to see.
And yet they scored zero runs on him.
Oh yeah, because he's Trevor Bauer. He's really good.
He is. He pitched like an 8-inning shutout.
It was the approach that I liked. It was not necessarily the result, but I think if you do it the right way, eventually it's going to break through for you.
Did you see the Tribe's first game against the Yankees? Did the exact same thing.
I didn't see it, but I believe it.
Who's the Cleveland pitcher, man? Like the best in baseball. That was his name.
Bieber.
Bieber started.
Shane Bieber.
Well, he was having a rough night.
Got shelled.
Well, every single fastball, first pitch fastball, even wherever it was, got swung at. And the Yankees are pretty good. They were putting the bat on it.
Yeah, Judge hit a 2-run homer in the first.
They were putting a bat on the ball. And then as soon as they swing it, then the other stuff, they just, and he was like, you know, those guys can't put that many curveballs in a row over. Plus, they don't really want to, because the ones that are over usually are kind of tumblers. And, makes it rough on the catcher, but he'd put a fastball and they'd swing, and maybe they'd foul it off. And then you go, all right, they're gonna. He pitched two curveballs in a row. Now it's 2-1. You come another fastball, they'd swing. They really had him. They had him mentally messed up a little bit, and he didn't last very long. But the Cleveland came back and almost won. But so everybody in the American League is over, right? And the National League has the Cubs and who else?
The Cubs and then the Padres, Cardinals, because the Padres were down big last night, came back and won, and so now there's a game three to decide that series.
Yeah, because Wainwright kind of got shelled, didn't he?
The Cardinals were up 6-2 in that game, and Wainwright was pitching pretty well, and I was loosely watching it, and I don't know if it was off of him or if it was off of the bullpen, but all of a sudden the Padres stormed back.
They got like three off him.
They scored like 7 runs in like the 6th inning or something, took the lead, and held on to beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, Wainwright gave up a few, and they took another guy, put another guy in, and he put gas on the fire. All right, so Kevin, what's the story with the...
And I didn't see the score. I'm assuming that the Dodgers beat the Brewers, but how badly did the Dodgers beat the Brewers?
That I don't know. It was late.
I'll pull it up.
Hey, what's with our POTUS, and is he 4 days into this? He just got tested? He got it yesterday? Who did he get it from? What's the chaser
doing?
Well,
they said Hope Hicks was the one who, who had been ill and got tested. One of his advisors. So it springs from there, probably. My understanding, watching the news of it this morning, was that he did an interview last night and while he was waiting for test results, and then got the test results.
How many times a day is he getting tested?
Sometime yesterday.
By the way, the Dodgers won 3-0 and swept the Brewers.
Wow, only three, huh? I was going to say the Brewers' pitching hasn't been that good. They held them down, but like so many teams we've seen this year, they can't hit even if they get good pitching.
One of our guys become hopefully this. I'm reading this for your chances of your probability of survival with COVID. This is from the CDC allegedly. 0 to 19, 99.997%. 20 to 49, 99.98%. 50 to 69, 99.5%. So we're still pretty good, Kevin. 70 plus, 94.6%.
Yeah, so he falls into that 70 plus category. Now, again, that's a macro statistic, much like we were just discussing with baseball. That now you get to the individual case and you say, you know, what are the probabilities based on his personal health? Well, he's older, but he's pretty energetic. He's overweight. How overweight is overweight compared to, say, a Chris Christie or somebody like that. So he isn't that. So I don't know what his probabilities would be. I would imagine because both he and his wife are asymptomatic. They may never get symptoms too.
Yeah, and I hope they don't. The last thing I want to do is if the game.
So again, we know the statistics for people in his age group. Now, how do they apply to an individual? Well, they don't.
Well, right. Well, I mean, it's so there's no idea of when what day he's on, and I guess what I'm saying.
They can probably get pretty close. The quarantines now, the standard quarantine is 14 days from the test, but in a lot of cases they're saying, it's closer to 10, and the mission is to get two positive tests in a row.
Two negative tests.
Two positive news, negative tests.
What I'm saying,
that's our recovery. I was right all along.
What I'm fishing for is, how often does he get tested? If he's tested every day, he must be one day into it, or 2 days.
Probably, yeah. That's probably right, because I'm sure he does get tested every day.
Now,
it's a matter of which test, too, because they may just be doing the quick test every day, and that has a... it's a little less reliable, so...
Well, that's what they were doing early on. They were catching some heat for it. So we do have some... I was hearing last night that some people were... actually, I heard a lot of really bad news last night, because I got a whole swath of people since we were watching the game. Somebody was saying that somebody in 425, which used to be 440, building is... One of the groups in the exchange floor evidently invited all their people back in last Friday, like 250 people, and fired them all. That's not so good. There's a lot. I would say in this area downtown in the Loop, there's more layoffs in the last 2 weeks than there have been the whole time. Now the good news is, I think another restaurant or two are opening up. I think there is a lot more traffic downtown. It's still like awful, but it's better. One of the ladies who works with us. One of the firms I do business with. She's coming back today, so that's good. So I think you're seeing it both sides, Kevin. I just, again, my theme here, and I don't know, is, and it's a theme because this is what I study. The theme here is the shall we say, the choke point for most businesses is right now. Because the money's gone from the government, there doesn't seem to be much progress on this new thing, and even if there is, it's buying. But maybe buying people another 30 days or 60 days right now might just be the trick. It might just be the thing to do, and it might get us over the hump. But the money from the last over the hump is clearly gone. The idea that this would be over by the end of June clearly was a total misestimation. I'm not saying it was bad when they did it, but it clearly was a total misestimation. Correct. And so now I think you're seeing people, all right, am I going to make it or not? Should I really open this restaurant or not? And when I see decisions like the CDC and the cruise lines, and I don't want to get into the CDC versus the White House versus whether it's, my gut feel is it's probably a month or two too early to have people pouring on a cruise ship, just saying. But the idea that you have a date and you get to 2 days before, when there's trucks lines up on the dock, pouring in bananas and apples and cantaloupes and stuff, and all of a sudden the steak guy shows up and you're loading up the freezers and people are going back to work and you say, nah, another couple of months. Kevin, those people should be fired tomorrow. Tomorrow. You can't do that. We need to have some kind of a rule that you cannot work for government unless you work somewhere else first or something. This is insane. This is just outright incompetence. It says this is not bad feeling. It's not bad thought. It's just incompetence. And we're going to go down by that, not by the politics, but just by the incompetence. I think. Hopefully
well,
not.
Yeah, I think you're one of the. Let's go back to all the layoffs just for a moment. I think one of the factors is that most small business owners, I think, have the mindset, especially if they've got long-time employees, that, let's hold on a little longer, see if we can turn the corner. Let's hold on a little longer and see if we can turn the corner. And then when you finally say, sorry, I'm done. I can't, it's not just a lack of optimism about the next month, the next 6 months, or anything like that. It's that I lack the funds to do it, even if it does turn. So when you're out of capital, when you're out of cash, you're out of options. And I think in many of those cases, now, when you finally get to this day where you have to let a lot of people go, and shut down your business, you're kicking yourself and saying, why didn't I do this 2 months ago?
Oh, sure. Oh, without a doubt.
Money. It's, you know, and I think that mindset is something that is just not understood at all. It's not understood by people who lived in big corporation world for a long time.
Well, it's always, it's other people's money to them, too. If you're just an employee in a corporation, it's just other people's money.
Yeah, it's that management class that we've talked about a lot, and I think Eric talks about it a lot.
Yeah.
It's the management class that, and that's different from the ruling class. There might be, you know, if you draw the Venn diagrams, there might be some overlap there, but it's the management class, and the average person kind of looks at that class and says, you know, a bunch of college educated people who don't know poop about what I do.
But
they don't mind telling me how to do it.
But the idea in this day, because we got to carry some of this over after the break, is it's all pretty important. One is, what is the definition of a layoff? Let's kind of write that down. And the other is, when you talk about Merck and Company or Commonwealth Edison, I know one thing's for sure, Edison's not alive, right? And Edison was an owner, and was there original Joe Merck? I don't know, or Mort Merck? I have no idea.
Bob Merck.
I mean, the point is, the management class now controls all the stuff that other people did, and their responsibility to the shareholders is really just to the stock that they and their buddies on top own. I mean, would they rather have a dividend or a $1 million bonus? Unless you got like a real lot of shares, you'd rather have the bonus. And that's what Eric is always talking about. Anyway, SP Futures now down 52. Ouch. NASDAQ Futures down 255. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature Protect and Index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie. Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures down 51.50, and if you haven't heard, if you wouldn't have heard unless you went to bed like real late, the President and First Lady have tested positive for coronavirus. Everybody's feeling good at some point. I mean, right now, so nothing to worry about, I guess. But it's not the best news for anybody. Dow futures down 396. Asia, Nikkei, you know, these guys, they were probably still open. Nikkei down 155.7%, Shanghai down 6.2%, Hang Seng actually up 183.7%. Just a review of yesterday, the Dow was up 35. It was taken down by a couple individual stocks. It was 3M and Caterpillar mostly. S&P, however, was up almost 18, 1780. NASDAQ was up 159. Big move in Netflix and a couple others. Some guy came out and said, Amazon's going to 6,000. Well, that's swell. DAX down 141, 1.1%. FTSE down 45.8%. CAC around down 49. That's an even 1%. Bonds, 0.65. Ouch, they were 0.7 like yesterday. The Bund, minus 0.54. That's racketing right back down again. Japan, positive 0.02. We've got oil down $1.61. Ouch. 37.11. I was just having a discussion with our group here yesterday. Is there any chance we should start dipping in some of these oil stocks? And I can't get myself to do it. Maybe here, I don't know. Brent down 166, 39.27. Natural gas down 5 cents, 246. And our Bob is down 4 cents to 111. So, ready to fill up the buggy this weekend. Gold, however, only down 290, still over 1900, 1913. Silver down 22 cents, $24.03. Copper up 3 cents, 289, but still well below the $3 number that we look at. Matty with Air Force Traffic Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We are very quiet coming inbound on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays or issues to report. So enjoy your nice, quiet Friday morning as you're heading into downtown, if you are, because there are no delays. Weather today, it's going to be a cool day, about 14 degrees below normal, Chief. Substantially colder than normal for October 2nd. Partly cloudy skies, a lot of sunshine, but a high of just 54 right
now.
So
you figured it's welcome at all the bars you have to sit outside at?
Well, you know, they have the nice heaters, Chief.
Yes.
Right now it's clear and 45 going up to a high of just 54. For our Phoenix listeners, they're not below normal. Sunshine with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the White Sox made the playoffs for the first time since 2008, but unfortunately, they did not win a series for the first time since 2005, as they lost 2-1 to the A's, falling 6-4 yesterday afternoon in Oakland. White Sox had a 3-run lead, and then gave up the lead, fell behind, rallied back to tie it, and fell behind again, and they just couldn't scrape together enough good at-bats to come from behind for a third time to beat the A's. So the White Sox season is over.
How many men they leave on base? 50?
I know that it was at least 11. I think they finished with 12 left on base after James McCann led off the ninth with a single and then was stranded at second base. So they stranded 12 guys on base. Pitching was also an issue, but 4 runs, you know, as good as that lineup is, 4 runs doesn't win you a ton of games. Sometimes it does, but it's not a be-all, end-all. You got to score more than that. But the pitching obviously was the story yesterday. But the White Sox season is over. Cubs season could be over this afternoon, as their game 2 was postponed from yesterday until today. It'll be Darvish versus Sanchez. That's a 1 p.m. Chicago time first pitch at Wrigley. Cubs, of course, trail the Marlins 1-0. Need to win today to stay alive and force a deciding game 3. Lastly, Thursday night football last night, it was a battle of 0-3 teams. I don't blame you if you didn't watch. It was an awful football game. But the Broncos now have a win. They beat the Jets in New Jersey 37-28.
Chief, how can you watch?
If you have NFL Network.
Well, okay.
The first 4 weeks are on NFL Network, and then I believe beginning next week, it's simulcasted on Fox. But the first 4 weeks were strictly NFL Network.
Last year, didn't they put them all on? They put them on Channel 7 the first 4 weeks or something?
ABC, you could be right on that. I don't know. I know that, yeah, some of them they've done the dual broadcast. Some of them have only been on NFL Network. I'm not sure how it broke down last year.
Well, I didn't miss the one last night.
No one missed that. It was awful.
Kevin, we're not getting into heavy duty semantics here. I'm going to get into heavy duty semantics.
All right.
When you say that,
who doesn't love heavy duty semantics?
Well, it bothers me when people call a vaccine it's not a vaccine, but a layoff, when I was, this is my definition of a layoff. A layoff is a company that somehow or another gets out of balance one way or the other, either by not enough sales or whatever, and you decide to go from a while to two shifts to one or whatever. In our case at Pullman, long story short, don't tell it, but we signed a contract with Boston. Talk about politics, it never changes. We signed a contract for 25 railroad cars with an option for 35 more with Boston. They hadn't had a railroad car in 50 years, right? That's how old their fleet was. And still they were dicking around with this thing. So we priced it at 60, figuring there's no way these guys are going to only get 25. That's only six trains, and they needed a lot more than that. It was like four trains and a six-car train. So we priced it for the whole thing. So all of a sudden the governor lets it be known that since this was such a big deal, because the railroad stock was so horrible, you could like see through the floors, that he wanted a car there before the primary, before the election. So could we possibly get a working car to him like 3 months earlier than we had said we would, or the contract called for? Also for like no extra money, right? So we're like, oh, and by the way, you're not going to get the other 35 cars unless you do. You know, so talk about a load of crap, right? So we jump through every hoop on earth, but
at least you'll have a railroad car to put all the crap in.
Yeah,
but keep going.
Yeah, but so if you know this, Kevin, if you could get your people, your suppliers, and most of your stuff is suppliers, your trucks, your air conditioners, everything. If you can get your suppliers to get you stuff earlier, and some of the stuff, the switches, the lights, those kinds of things, you could. If you could just get the stuff earlier, and just bring up the line, you'll be okay. If once you get to the point where people are special making things, A, it's going to cost a fortune, and B, you didn't do any good, right? Because you're still on the old schedule. So, of course, we end up custom making this car and sending it out to this loser. When I say loser, he ended up losing the primary, right? And didn't even run for governor. So that's how bad it was. The sitting governor lost the primary. Right? So you can tell what kind of a bozo this guy was. So anyway, we're in the hole on this contract. So now we've got all these people there working with like nothing to do. So I'm the finance guy, and I go through the numbers, and they just don't work out. And I'm going, oh God. And these guys, you know, have got to the point where these guys are all my friends pretty much. So I say, look, to my boss, I go, you know, we got to lay people off for 3 weeks because we're not going to get parts for 3 weeks. We got people sitting here doing nothing. Now that, in my definition, is a layoff. The business is ongoing. There's a screw up, something, sales are down for a week, your inventory gets too high, you lay people off for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and you bring them back. I think that's the classic definition of a layoff.
That's exactly what it should mean.
Yes.
A layoff means, you're sent away temporarily, we'll bring you back when we have the volume to support
it. And we also kind of almost know the day, you know, in some cases, in this case we did. So, that, you know, and some of these guys are all blue-collar dudes. They didn't care. They all had bass boats. They all went fishing for 2 weeks. I mean, some of the guys probably did, but they probably dropped on unemployment for 2 weeks. And, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world. And, but what you see, when you have a company, like I talked about the firm allegedly at 425, where you bring your people in and say, hey, you know what? We made it as far as we can. See it. I'm never going to see any of you ever again. That's not a layoff, Kevin.
That's being fired.
That's being fired.
Dismissed. That is anything but a layoff.
Right, it's anything but a layoff.
I agree with you. But layoffs sound so much nicer.
Yeah, well, we had a guy talk about, he's still, buddy, I went out to dinner with him after 50 years, Stan Bartnizak, what a character. He was our cost accountant guy. So, and Stan was a real smart guy. So some guy comes in, he's interviewing the dude. The guy starts telling him, "Well, I was riffed." No, I don't know if Matt even knows what that. I mean, that's when the word was reduction enforced. I was riffed. Mm-hmm. He was riffed, and then he's later.
Before we got to right sizing, which may be the most disingenuous term ever invented.
Well, then somewhere along in the conversation, the guy goes, "Well, I was downsized." So Stan looks at me, and he goes, "Buddy, you got bleep kid. I don't care why you're here. Let's just figure out if I want to hire you. By the way, you're hired." He says, "You were bleep kid. You can put any other word you want on it, but you were bleep kid." You know what? Sometimes when the truth hurts, it should, shall I say. But anyway, Kevin, I just, when we keep dodging around, is now, today is not a sell-off. It's market volatility. It's a sell-off. It's down. If you bought Boeing yesterday, you're down $6. You're down. Let's not keep making up new words for it, right? What are we doing that for? Just saying.
Well, it's, again, this, you know, we talked about management class. That is a product of this thinking. There goes with it almost a disdain for ordinary people thinking they're too dumb to distinguish. You know, maybe in some cases that's true, but I think when someone understands that they were riffed or laid off, and you know, and when the reality of it is I don't have a job and I'm not going to ever have a job there again,
right?
Especially when you just got a small severance check, but you had to sign to get it that said, "I'm never coming back, I'm not gonna sue you." I think at that point, the average person knows damn well what happened.
One would
call it whatever you want, but they know.
Yeah, at some point we need to point things out directly, and that way you can go toward the fix. What's the first thing about AA is recognizing you belong in AA. Isn't that the first step on the 10 or something?
Yeah, the first step is accepting that you have a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why we keep dodging around this stuff. I mean, let's just say what the problems are. I mean, and I don't get, and this goes right down the line. Whether it's, I don't know about whether Trump does it, but it seems like politicians in general, and clearly the people that are here in Illinois, the Lori, the Tony, and the Jay gang. They are absolutely convinced that they're. Why do people, if you win an election, why do you immediately turn around and figure out that the people who elected you are idiots, and you can't trust them with the truth? If they're supposed to be smart, that's why they elected you, right? Well, what do you get by downgrading, by dumbing down the people who voted for you and by the population? I would rather, I mean, my brother was saying to me, we were arguing a little bit about the COVID thing and about how people are afraid and this and that. He said, what could you possibly do now? I said, Dan, we should be doing what we should have been doing all along. It's giving people all the proper information and making them make their own decisions. Well, you can't count on common sense. Once you start down that valley, it's a long road down to that river. I mean, right?
Right, because I'll tell you, I see less common sense on the highway than anywhere else.
Yeah. So,
or just driving around the street. So if that's going to be our attitude, then we better not, you know, we better get those self-driving cars here soon, because we can't count on drivers' common sense.
And
there's enough times when I'm shaking my head and thinking, yep, that's the case. But really, I'm with you, Tom, good information, data, and as I've been harping on for a long time, that making that delineation between data and information, because all we get out of media is data. It's not, you know, organized, or, you know, we don't see a lot of trend lines or anything like that. And then, yeah, let people be grown-ups. This is why we educate people. If we don't have a school system that can produce people who can use their common sense, boy, we are in deep doo-doo, and we are.
Yeah, one of the guys last night was...
We are, because I hear it from employers all the time. No critical thinking. I can't find people who know how to think critically. I just hear that, and it's a repetitive thing. So I know it to be true just by experience, because I talk to employers all the time.
Well, when you lose... This is the part I don't... there's like stages to the product. I think honestly, Kevin, when you don't teach kids how to multiply and divide and subtract, you lose a mental function. I'm a doctor of inside the brain, those guys, neurosurgeon or something. I'm no neurosurgeon, but I think all this stuff that you learn is learning how to read and retain it and take a test afterward. Those kinds of things. I don't care what you're. I mean, I care what you're reading, I guess, as long as it's not something bizarre. But I mean, there's a certain training that goes to all this. I mean, learning how to be a carpenter, learning how to do those kinds of things, or even doing an involved math problem. You have to be able to visualize. Okay, what's happening here? This is happening, then this happens, and this happens. In order for you to put it into numbers, you have to be able to essentially think out what's happening. When you stop doing all that. The idea of the whole process of how do you get from point A to point B. The guys I was always the most jealous of at Pullman. I mean, I could never have done a drawing or designed a car. I mean, God, if I drew a stick man, he'd be a big fatso, right? But when somebody did do that, and another guy looked at it and goes, oh, all right, well, you take this piece and that piece and you bolt them together and that's how you start. I was just flummoxed by those guys. And I'm sure, and sure math and other stuff, they couldn't hold a candle to me, but I was so jealous. Kevin, when he'd sit there and go, all right, here's how you start a house. Here's the first two things you need, then this, and pretty soon a day later you got a house. But those guys that could actually visualize the end product and the drawing and the parts and start without having to take it apart again, you know, because you missed a step, I always thought those guys were absolutely special. And I don't know if we have, I don't see any of that, I mean, one of the guys was complaining about his son the other day. How he doesn't talk to people. He doesn't work. I said, for God's sake, we go out to dinner with the kid. He's on his cell phone all night long. Take it away from him. You know, why is he going to talk to his friends? He doesn't talk to us. I mean what do people expect, Kevin? I think if we had a school, an elementary school, there'd be a class where it wouldn't be me, somebody like you, teaching kids how to use their computers and stuff better than the other kids. Then the next class, the computer would be in the hall. Now it's about you thinking. I'm not saying one's better or other. I think you just need to do both. Where am I wrong?
I don't think you are. And you know, I've laid out, and it's a long process to get curriculum approved. Too long, in my opinion, because we need to at least be able to pilot some things. But when I laid out curriculum for what we should do with our dual enrollment high school kids, and these are the kids who will come to either to our campus or join us online now, but they're in high school and they're going to take courses from the Ivy Tech, and they're going to get high school and college credit for them. So we put together a curriculum. It has industry certifications embedded in it. It's good. You know, it's good. This is a good thing. This is a good process. But where I want to go with it is before I ever start them into the supply chain management piece, the part that has, you know, tech skills to it, is a whole series of foundations. So, you know, you start with just business foundations, things that are basic employability skills. And then you move from there into, more advanced business foundations, so you start learning accounting, a little bit about business law, all those things that you need to be successful in the business world. It shifts then to technology foundations, so that you not only understand, how to use your personal computing devices, but you sort of understand technology in the context of how it'll advance the business and what Industry 4.0 is, and you know, all those kinds of things. And then whole sections on ethics and ethics challenges and, all of that. And that's before we ever touch anything related to supply chain management. And, you know, the idea there and the feedback I've gotten from my advisory board is fantastic on it. And so the whole idea behind it is to prepare people to be great employees, in their case. And I think it would apply as a school mission to say we're preparing people to be great citizens. because and you get into all of that critical thinking and, you know, everything like that that's important. And so to me, that's what's missing. I've identified that as a critical missing, and I'm trying to address it, you know, in my own way.
Well, one of the themes of this discussion, if anybody thinks there is one, is we have to be very careful, and I think we're getting there the next couple of months. I actually thought the first package was pretty sloppy, the first federal government package, but I think actually right now, Kevin, we are right on the cusp, and if we find a way, I think we're starting to see a little bit of change in people's fear of the COVID. They're not where you and I are in terms of you know, this thing was never containable in the first place. What did we do? But it was much more fearful in the first place because people, the treatment was pretty lousy, and now it's a lot better. It's still not as good as we'd like, but so we're kind of reaching the point that right now, seeing what it's doing to people, you wouldn't broadcast over national TV that a kid in high school football in Ohio got the COVID. It'd be like the flu, only a little worse. So right now, you know, we have to have a lot of people. It's going to take a while to get people through there, but it's going to come economically. If somebody else is working, I better go back to work too, or I'm not going to have a job. You know, I mean, we're going to have to get to that point. But what I'm saying is coming from the Pullman experience, you can do whatever you want. You can have business go down. You can have people get laid off. You can have crummy business for a couple of years. But there's a background of talent. There's a background of equipment that's there. There's old welding machines hanging in the corner. There's old stamping presses that you could turn back on if you wanted to that are 50 years old and still work. Once the day comes when you say, we're out, and you lose all that, you have lost, no matter what industry it is, you've lost tremendous amounts of stuff, whether it's a trading firm with their proprietary software, with their 40 people that have really serious trading abilities that could make markets for people, that could make, when you see these markets moving up and down 10 and 20 points, a lot of that is because there's no trading firms anymore. There's only a few. And it's the market is not as good as it used to be. That's why, in my honest, it's a shameless plug, that's why most people need a firm like us to help them, but they don't necessarily realize that, and, you know, I can't help that. But and there's other firms like us, not, you know, I won't say as good, but there's other firms. People think in this market that they can ring it on themselves. God's sake, it's like me thinking I go pitch by myself in the World Series. Come on. But I'm saying, Kevin, is once you reach that stage where you're gone, you know, and you tear all that stuff out and you scrap it and you take all the people and you send them in their different directions, you've lost an amazing piece of ability. And I don't, to try and get that back is, it's not impossible, but it's really tough. So I think we're at that level here. So I think the next couple of months, we need some kind of an injection. We shouldn't be in the hole that we are now because of the next injection. But I think, honestly, the next little bit of dough might not be just throwing good money after bad. It might be something, because if we can bridge us a month or two here, maybe one of these guys is talking about, you know, the vaccine, or it's not a vaccine, but it's enough to get people's fear down to where they'll go back to work. It might be enough to get us there. And
it's interesting because it would be supporting a movement. I sent you a note about Martha Raddatz, ABC reporter.
Yes.
She took a 6,000-mile trip around America just to, you know, just to do some, not scientific polling, but to get the attitudes. And she was on The View Tuesday, and her comment is, and this is a quote, "A lot of people are talking about the economy more than anything else. I was very surprised because in regards to COVID, when you cross the country, you wouldn't really know it's happening. I was really shocked at how few people were wearing masks in certain areas. It's like, I'm tired of this. I'll just get back to doing what I wanted to do before." The hardcore Trump voters, they basically say Trump walks on water. Nothing will change their mind. In fact, this morning I called someone I talked to on the road about Donald Trump and the tax story, and he said, good for Donald Trump. As long as it wasn't illegal, I want the name of his accountant. Those people, that solid base, are not going anywhere. I also found that there wasn't a whole lot of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. There's a lot of enthusiasm among Democratic voters and some independents to get Donald Trump out, but not necessarily that enthusiasm. In other words, the Biden enthusiasm. The point of that is that once we make up our minds, critical thinking goes out the window. And I think you see that. You see that with the virus, that once people got, you know, those who got deathly afraid are not, there's nothing you can say. There's nothing you can say about trends, and this is my experience as well, that is going to change their minds. And people who were skeptical all along, it doesn't matter what you throw at them about the dangers and concerns, they're going to dismiss it.
Well,
and I think that's, you know, that's where we are. And I think you're right, though. There's enough momentum that says I want to get back to normal, that if you can buy some time, just a little more time, we may get there. I'm in an area where a whole lot of stuff is back to normal, not on the Michigan side of the border, although even that isn't, at least locally, isn't as bad as, you know, things like state government that is just completely unresponsive to anything at this point. But in Indiana, everything's open. They just want everybody, you know, there's a lot of places that don't have mandates, but they're just encouraging people to wear masks. But they went back to 100%.
Well, a lot of what's happening, and I'm not going to name names, but some of the people that I know are close to our office, is they were home because, and we know, our Notre Dame pals. Two of our gang that are on our list have not seen a granddaughter that was born in May, because the parents are paranoid to have anybody come see them. And a couple of ladies that I know of that have been home since March, basically, somebody in their family had a baby, and the parents have said, if you're going to be going to work every day, you can't come see the kid. That's the fear that we have put through the system. It's not that they are necessarily afraid at age 30 or 35 to come to work and about the COVID. It's the, I'm going to kill my parents, I'm going to kill my niece, I'm going to kill whatever. And that just got to stop, Kevin. It's just got to stop. I mean, because it's not, you're not going to kill your niece. Well, I don't think. Whatever. You can't.
Well, and again, once you have that fear, then the next thing is, what do the statistics tell us? Doesn't matter. Still afraid.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're afraid.
What grown-ups do when they, it's okay. Everybody has irrational fears. What you do with irrational fears is you face them.
Yeah.
And deal with them. You don't just accept them as is without making any changes and shut down as a result of it.
By the way, who are the Irish playing tomorrow? I'm going to let you go.
They're not playing anybody tomorrow. I think their next game is Florida State a week from tomorrow.
So tomorrow was supposed to be a bye?
It was supposed to be Wake Forest, I think. So they can't. They've postponed that.
That was last week.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
So it's hard to get.
They don't have a game scheduled tomorrow. So
all right, we'll talk about it next week. But as we feature down 54, as we feature down 286. If you haven't heard, president and wife have tested positive for coronavirus. Everybody's feeling good so far. Hopefully they will stay that way. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now, there's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Carl Denninger with us. S&P Futures down 54. NASDAQ Futures down 276. Now, I'm not going to say how I think he knows, but I'm going to ask Carl. We have people trying to send the White House ricin that they catch. And what's the other one that the cows get that they always try and send around? Anthrax?
What, anthrax?
Anthrax, yeah.
Now, can you send somebody COVID in an envelope?
I suppose you could try. it's kind of the irony of all of this is just delicious. The reality of this entire thing, as I've said since February or March when it all started, was that whether you like it or not, we're all going to get exposed. Okay, I'm reasonably certain I've been exposed at least twice since this thing started. Just because people that I, went and had a beer with, or was sitting in a bar with, we're having a beer, they got it. Okay? So, well, guess what? If I'm sitting on the next bar stool, yeah. Okay, I'm exposed. But I haven't gotten sick. Now, I don't know if that's because my personal prophylaxis routine that I've been using since February works. I don't know if it's because I'm T-cell reactive and I can't get it. I know it's not because I've had a silent infection and I have antibodies, because I managed to get my hands on some antibody kits and I've run a few of them and I'm negative. So it's not because I got it but had no symptoms. Okay? But I don't know what the reason is. And this is, this is one of the problems with running around screaming that there is no, everybody's susceptible, there's nothing you can do, hide in your house, wear a mask, blah, 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 blah. It's BS. On the science, it's bull. And the idea that you can hide from this thing is bull. You can't. Every country that thought they won, and every state that thought they won. I mean, look at Hawaii. Hawaii, on July 1st, put in arguably the worst quarantine and mask restrictions in the country. And they could get away with it because they're an island state.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You come into the state, you got 2 weeks, you got 2 weeks in a hotel, there's nothing you can do about it, you leave, you're going to jail, if you don't wear a mask, you go to jail, They took a 10 times infection rate spike after they did this.
Yeah, all you do is delay it.
Well, yeah, you've done nothing, okay? I mean, Michigan,
Wisconsin, look at Wisconsin, look at South Dakota, North Dakota, although both North and South Dakota now are getting into the suppression range, and their rates will fall within the next few days. And Florida, you know, essentially tried to play games with it. Then DeSantis starts running around saying, oh, you know, look at our great results, and you know, everything's open now. Well, no, because if your great results were because you did all these things, then everything is open now and all the restrictions are void, would just mean that you get hammered. The truth is the reason Florida's there is because enough people have gotten it that, you know, you've got suppression. So, and the same thing with this area, but we still have clowns in Tennessee that think that there is, you know, there's this virtue signaling. And then you get Pennsylvania's governor gets caught on a hot mic a couple of days ago admitting that this entire mask thing is political theater.
Oh yeah, well, it is. It's great theater. I don't think there's any doubt.
Of course it is. But how much good or not good? And now, you know, everyone's going to have a field day because now, you know, Trump and Melania both, excuse me, if I get it and you're susceptible and we're sleeping together, you're getting it. Okay.
Actually, you know, believe it or not, as you know, I talk to just about everybody, and so do you. I probably know three couples, at least three, where one of them got it, one of them didn't.
That's the thing, is that that's what I've been pointing out now since this thing started, okay? I had a very good friend of mine whose grandfather, in his 90s, lots of comorbidities, it killed him, and it killed him fast. He went from being sick to being dead in like 3 days, okay? And, you know, I mean, but on the other hand, if he got the flu, it would have knocked him over with a feather, too.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, you know, the guy had like 15 things wrong with him. Of course, you know, that tends to happen when you're 94, right? His wife didn't even sneeze. All right? She's, you know, now, of course, you know, it's terrible that her husband's gone.
Yeah.
But she didn't get sick. She didn't test positive. She's, you know, they were cramming swabs up her nose for 2 weeks. But she never got it. And the only way that is plausible is if she was T-cell reactive and thus immune. There's no other possible explanation.
Kyle,
what
do you think when this is all over? Because you're more, I want to talk about, you know, more about the market down here and the employment numbers coming up. But I got to ask you, when this is all said and done, and somebody, the reason why I ask you this is the guy who advertised on the show, Dr. Miller from ChiroMed, terrific guy. And of course he is. Talk about somebody in the Southwest side that everybody comes through his office between, you know, the patients, and he's got people doing stem cell stuff. He's got all kinds of stuff. So if ever is a guy who's the fulcrum of what's going on in Orland Park, it's Dr. Miller. Plus, he's the nicest guy that ever walked, and he's a really good chiropractor. He was telling me that, now Audrey, my significant other, had this horrendous viral something in February. She was 2 weeks pretty much flat on her ass. I mean, she's a tough girl. I mean, she wasn't showing house. She wasn't doing anything, which is enough, which means, you know, she's got one foot in the grave for that to happen. And her doctor, said it's certainly not the flu going around. It's some virus, unnamed virus. Well, Frank, the contributor to the show, he and his wife had the same thing. And Dr. Miller tells me it went through their office like a house of fire. All the patients, he goes, I don't know if that was the epicenter or what. Everybody had this thing. Nobody can identify it. Everybody knows it wasn't the seasonal flu.
And by H1N1.
But every one of these guys, nobody has tested positive for the antibodies for the COVID. He said, not one person that I know of that had whatever that was has gotten the COVID.
Well, yeah, you know, last year, H1N1, which was the, you know, that's the 1918-1919 pandemic flu, was one of the strains that was going around. And influenza A and B, the standard test that they run in the doc office, will not pick that one up because it is not part of the kit.
Okay.
And the CDC knew it was coming. They found out kind of late that it was likely to circulate, and they tried to get two of the epitopes for it into the flu vaccine. I don't know if they succeeded or not. But the reality of it is that thing was nasty. I got nailed by it in January. And
that's about the time, January, February.
Butt.
Yeah. Matter of fact, some people here got it as early as is December. That's why some people were calling their show and telling me, I know I had it in December, but I don't think it was that. I think it was what you're talking about now.
Well, the reason I got all cranked up about trying to get antibody tests early on and got my hands on a bunch of them was I had a pretty decent, I mean, based on the symptomology and everything, I thought, all right, you had COVID, you stupid SOB, and in January, early January. But I get the flu every now and then. I don't take the shot. And this one knocked me on my butt. If I'd been medically brittle, it would have killed me.
Yeah, I'm saying Art was, having trouble breathing the whole nine yards. It was about as bad a flu as I've seen.
Oh yeah, no, it was terrible.
Yeah,
but the thing is that there's another problem too, which is that there's some evidence that the flu vaccine interferes with COVID. In other words, it actually stops your body from recognizing and killing it. And the evidence is not real strong, but there's now a paper that I just got a preprint of, the PDF of it yesterday, and the DOD had noted that there was a problem with interference between the flu vaccine and coronaviruses a couple of years ago. But, of course, that wasn't serious because, most coronaviruses cause colds. So, all right, it's an annoyance. It's not a big deal. But as soon as I'd seen that paper, my antenna went up because it's like, uh-oh. This could be very bad, especially considering, who goes and gets the flu vaccine, right? It's older people that, the flu could nail them. So there is a real possibility that's going on, and now there's this longitudinal analysis that's been done, and it's an association. It's not proof. But the scary part of that is that, you think you're going to get this vaccine because, the flu could kill you, and all of a sudden what it does is it makes you more susceptible to COVID.
Yeah, but that's not good.
No, it's very bad, but the thing is, the science is not there, and they haven't chased this. And you notice everyone's running around saying, get your flu shot, get your flu shot, get your flu. Well, you know what? You better prove that that is not the case first.
Well, the science is, to me, in the last few years, is the last 10 years is pretty, is, I don't know, I just think it's pretty sloppy, Carl. But not that any individual scientist is not, probably a genius in their own right, they'd be laughing at me, but even simple stuff, when people say all these vaccines you give kids are not part of the autism, they're not part of the, everybody allergic to peanuts, and I go, okay, I'm with you to a point, but you can't tell me it's absolutely not one thing if you can't tell me what it is. I mean, how do you know? you're probably right. You're still not telling me why you got to give 8 vaccinations in the same shot or 6, but I can't walk up to you and say, Carl, your asthma is not caused by ragweed. Okay, thanks. What is it caused by? Well, I have no idea.
Right.
Well, then tell me, how do you know it's not ragweed? I just know. Well, what is it then? I don't know. To me, that whole conversation, I don't know, we took a little bit of logic somewhere in my college career, and that's just not it. Hey, I don't know, heard me earlier. I'm not a massive fan of stimulus and so forth, but I get the feeling right now, at least in this area, Carl, that companies are they're not just laying people off; they're going out. I think right now that if ever was a time that I would there's a time for everything, right? If ever there was a time for 6 weeks to 8 weeks of stimulus, it would be right now. And I'm sorry we overspent what we did earlier and pissed away all that money, but right now is, I think, the time where it might do some good. It might actually be the little bridge across the creek that all of a sudden got a little bigger. I think it would be worth a try right here, intelligently done. I don't know that you needed $1 trillion, but I think you need something. The reason why I think this is, I was listening the other day to, I'll give them the kudos, somebody on News Radio 78 saying that loans out of regular banks to small business have totally dried up.
Because nobody can qualify anymore for them.
Right. So, I mean, if there's a time for some quick 1 month more of the PPP or something along those lines, or 6 weeks or 8 weeks, I think we can, the fear is starting to drop a little bit, and we got a chance of some kind of at least a vaccine that helps some of the older people. Maybe in 8 to 12 weeks, we can jump over this thing, if we
could. The only way you're going to do that is for the government to come in, and at the same time they do this, federal, and this won't happen. We just had this little fancy debate down here in Tennessee. You need to drop the emergency constraints, all of them. And the problem is, the governor here, he did a little truth-telling. I mean, most of these guys lie all the time. They did a little truth-telling. He said he's keeping the declaration of emergency because it keeps the federal money coming in.
I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is part of the chessboard, I'm trying to focus in on the economic chessboard. Right now, I think that there's 1,000 places within 3 miles of where I'm sitting that are right at the cusp. And I agree with everything you're saying in terms of the politics and opening up and trying to get people to be a little less afraid and so forth, especially if they're, if they've already had it, for God's sake. The idea of finding people $300,000 for not wearing a mask on TV when they already had it. But we got to stop that crap. I mean, for God, but say we do. I'm just saying, but purely on the economic side, I'm saying we need 8 to 10 weeks right now. Right now. And I think if the other stuff you're talking about happens, or at least half happens with it, we might be able to jump over this. That's where I'm at. I mean, you think I'm totally wrong or not? They both have to happen together.
Yeah, no, I think you're wrong, because I think one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to have a immediate cessation of all of the crazy, 3 days after the election's over when Trump loses. Simply because the governors in the blue states in particular, right? I mean, let's face it, Illinois, Michigan, hello. They're going to recognize that, they have to drop it. And a big part of why they kept on, did what they did, had nothing to do with what they could actually influence on the virus. It had to do with playing politics. And the reason for it is gone. The other possibility, though, is that Trump wins, in which case they're gonna save face, and they're gonna keep everything until there is vaccine coverage, not just the availability, but the coverage. And the reality is, a huge percentage of the population is going to wisely refuse for at least a year or two to take it. And that, by the way, unless you're at very high risk, is real smart. All right, because there is no substitute for time in figuring out whether or not this thing is safe. On the other hand, if you're one of those people that if you get COVID, that there's a 10% chance it's going to kill you, then the calculus is different.
Right, but Carl, the mentality of it is, and here's I actually kind of think we're talking about two different things, but I think I'm actually right here, because what I'm talking about is,
well, no, you're trying to bridge the gap, so to speak.
No, what I'm saying is, if right now today, with the fear you've instilled in the society, if you were to say, okay, restaurants in Chicago can open up to 75 or 100%, somebody's still not going to show up. It's going to take a couple of months just for people to trickle back into the place. I mean, granted, some people go right back in. So I'm saying we need to help these people out for the couple of months where they actually do now have full employees, full refrigerators, you had a stock again. I think there needs to be some help there. It normally would come from the banks, and it's not. Okay, so there needs to be some sort of other way for these guys to get some financing or something. Call it stimulus, call it whatever you want. And it's not there. So I don't think you can forget that part. Or the same day, you say, okay, the restaurant's going to be open 100%, and the guy's going to say, I don't care, I'm closing tomorrow anyway, I don't have any money.
What I'm saying is, I don't think that the let's aim at the next, month and a half, 2 months, okay? I don't think that gets you there, because I don't believe that what they've done over the last, 8-9 months, I don't think it goes away in a couple of months. I don't think it comes back far enough for it to matter. And so now you're saying, well, what is the real timeline on this? I think it's closer to a year, and then we're into the other part of the problem, which is all of the inflationary pressure that the Fed and the federal government put into this is going to hammer us somewhere around next summer.
Well, I'm being very ground floor here. I'm on chessboard number one. You're on number two. What I'm saying is, right now, if you give Carl and Chief's Hamburger Joint, which would seats 100 people, if you give me the okay to open, all right,
right,
and now I'm down. We're down to our last, kind of nickel. Okay, it's going to cost us what's it going to cost? I'm a restaurant guy. Maddie, you know, your brother's a master chef. What does it cost to refill all the refrigerators and get your people back? $20,000? Something like that?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so far, what I'm saying is if the federal government should, if they had any brains, they would realize that they've buried the current banking system when it comes to people like us. Somebody's got to come up with that $20,000. Whether it's some sort of a loan lifeline, something. If you want us to open, you haven't done, it's like in the movie when the guy said, I'll marry you at Caddyshack, tanks for nothing. I mean, we're at the point here where if you tell me I can open up tomorrow, I'm going to say tanks for nothing.
Because I got an empty freezer and I don't got the $20,000 to fill it.
Right. I'm trying to stay on that level. The other stuff I'm with you on, bud. I mean, I'm just saying, yeah, all this stuff has to take a place above it. But on the bottom line is, I'm worried about these guys. You know what I'm saying?
Well, no, I understand that. But if you fill the freezer, and then a month later or 2 months later, I go bankrupt anyway, you haven't done anything.
Well, what the vaccines are going to do, even if they're marginally acceptable, it's going to cause, if you walk down the street perfectly healthy, or maybe you've had the COVID before, if without a mask, and somebody says, hey, bleep, put your mask on, you're going to turn around and say, hey, if you're that worried about it, go get a vaccine. Right?
Right.
So at least it gives some pushback to the guys making all these rules right now that are kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no, and I don't disagree with you, and I think that to some degree that will help break the fever. All right, and you could give people a shot full of saline, and tell them it's a COVID vaccine. It would help break the fever, right? Because you know the belief is as much as it. And oh, by the way, with about half the people being inherently immune, you'd probably get about the same effect too, which is the really scary part of this. But I think that when you get down to it, first off, there's quite a bit of money in the PPP program and stuff that has not been used.
Well, you can't apply anymore.
Well, that's true. But the thing is, I don't think you need to pass another bolus of something that's going to, on the back end, stick another cork in our back end.
If you got the money, if you had a firm and got the money through the end of June and paid people and now are looking for forgiveness, which they're supposed to give you, you can't apply again and say, give me another month. The way it stands now. If the money's there, then they should just be able to change it and say you can apply for another month.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't have any problem with the Congress saying, you know what, we appropriated these funds. They haven't been spent. The original application deadline has, of course, run. You can go back and use what's there that hasn't been consumed.
But I'm saying you need, that was written to take you to the end of June. You don't have to say, Add 4 weeks of October to it. Hey, we got to get into these. I have one here from Maddie's buddy, Dante Alighieri. The darkest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. Tell that to your buddies, Maddie.
I got a lot of friends that are very neutral, and I don't like it.
Well, that's because, you know, as much as he hates to admit it, Carl, we collectively have changed him. He's become, among his friends, he's become us, asking the tough questions.
Oh, well, good.
Asking the tough questions and stuff. And I don't think it's made you all that popular, has it, Manny?
Well, I think I wouldn't say I've become you guys because I do tend to let things go. But I really question a lack of common sense. And this whole thing has really created a lot of a big lack of common sense, which I find to be very strange.
I would agree. Well,
such as getting tested and then going and mingling at a bar with hundreds of people and then acting like your test is still valid. Like that's insane.
All right, Carl.
I almost lost friends last night for pointing out that that's insane.
God, Carl. Hey, we got 2 minutes before the numbers. What are we looking for?
My guess is we're going to have kind of up the middle. My problem is my gauge is all over the place. Because of the craziness in the data, I'm going to take a wild stab at this and say 750.
And is that good?
Not really, because it's past the sample, and the real layoff hammer is coming down now.
Yeah, it is. It's coming down this week.
It's now. So you're past the sample week. So is the 750 good? No, and it's probably also the last hurrah.
What What do you make of this going on with the airlines? Are they going to lay off to 30,000 people or no?
You know, it's tough to know because it's what's going to happen with regards to getting more money. Okay, I mean that's the bottom line is that's what they need in order to not do it. And yet, the thing is, again, look, these guys cannot make money ever with the capacity constraints and the masks and the, you know, we can't use the middle seats and just run the math on the fuel consumption. You can't make a profit unless you can run full planes.
I was talking to a guy yesterday, and he came back from someplace, said the plane was full. They're just not running very many planes. They're all kind of, everybody says they're full, or you know, reasonably full.
They're just they're running at whatever capacity they can, but the problem is you have fixed costs in an airline.
Oh, yeah.
And the gross margins against those fixed costs are small. So if you cannot manage capacity and run the plane with every seat occupied, you can't make money.
It used to be, back in the day when the prices were fixed and all the mail and everything else they carried, my cousin used to work for an airlines years and years ago. He said 50% occupancy, you were above break even. I don't think it's anywhere near that anymore, do you?
Oh, but no. You probably have to run somewhere around 80, 85.
If you're going overseas, though, those tickets are so expensive and the value of the stuff in the cargo hold is so high that those numbers drop, don't they? I think.
To some extent, but even there, it's become an issue. All right, I mean, it's, you know, there were times in the 1980s that, you know, the actual on a plane was the only one in the aircraft, and they managed to, you know, to stay in operation. These days, you can't get away with that kind of thing.
You know, when I was on the board of the CBOE, this is a new low in one percenters. We came out of this board meeting in Washington. We all traipsed out the rail. Something going on with the airlines, and somehow or another, everybody left on a plane like right before the one we were in. Well, so all the staff members, they fly all over the place, so they got all these upgrade tickets, right? So, of course, the staff member doesn't like this BN first class where a member on the board, like me, is in steerage, right? So, but I don't care. As long as I got a seat for my long legs, I was fine. So give me the exit seat. I was very happy in coach. And, you gotta trade up. Get a load of this. We load up the first class part with the people from our meeting. Every seat in first class is taken. Guess how many people were in coach?
Oh, what, 5?
0.
There was 6. Ooh, there was 661.
There was none in coach. All right, after the break, we'll come back and analyze those numbers, not worry about my airplane flight 30 years ago. We'll be right back. SP Futures now down 49. They've ducked down on these numbers. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lone Wolf Base, Stocks and Jocks. On time, he's Mr. Whitworth on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger on our big day of the month with the labor coming out. Well, big day today in a lot of reasons. We got baseball, we got President Sick, we got all kinds of stuff. Anyway, S&P futures really haven't moved much on these labor numbers. They're down 44. They were like right there before they came out. NASDAQ futures down 228. Dow futures, let me get the Dow futures, we are down 396. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei, well, they're not moving on these numbers. Down 155.7%, Shanghai down 6.2%, Hang Seng up 183.8%, so they're going different directions for some reason. As a review of yesterday, got to review yesterday's now because these days are all kind of crazy. Yesterday, the Dow was only up 35, but the S&Ps were up 18, NASDAQ futures up 159, so the NASDAQ was way up yesterday. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 141, 1.1%, FTSE down 45.8%, Kekaran down 49, that's a full 1%. Bonds down to 65 again, which is, I thought maybe there was something good happening when they went back up over 70, but right back down. Bund, minus 0.55, which again is down to where they low lately. Japan over positive 0.02, so they're kind of hanging positive. Oil down $1.61, 37.11, it's down 4%, ouch. Brent down 166, 39.27. Natural gas down 240, I'm sorry, down 5 cents to 247. RBOB down 4 cents to 110. Gold is down $3, 19.13, a big rally yesterday. Silver not only down 14 cents, it was down 20 earlier, 24.11. Copper up 3, almost 4 cents, to 290, but under $3. Number came over, the number was what, 681 maybe, or 691, something like that? The labor number, so less than, we're going to go through that totally when Mandy's done with traffic weather sports.
Sure, 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We do have a crash now on the outbound Stevenson. This is at County Line Road, which is exit number 276. Crash has been moved to the left shoulder, but some resulting delays. Lakeshore Drive out to the Tri-State is up to 20 minutes on the Stevenson. To I-355 is 31 minutes, so expect some traffic delays if you're heading outbound on I-55. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. The Eisenhower has been relatively quiet all morning. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Just some brake lights when you're heading close to the circle, but no accidents or stalls to report. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Sacramento and West Washington on the west side of the city. And then out in the western suburbs, there's a crash at Route 83. And it looks like, let's see here, Route 83 and Thorndale Avenue, there is a crash out in the western suburbs. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, very cool temperatures today, about 15 degrees below normal. But sunshine will reach a high of 54. Right now it's sunny and 46, going up to a partly cloudy high of 54. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, the White Sox season is over. They lost to the A's 6-4 and dropped that series 2-1 in Oakland. White Sox made their first playoff appearance since 2008 and had a very nice season, but have still not won a playoff series since 2005. The Cubs look to avoid elimination this afternoon. They trail the Marlins 1-0 as their game 2 was postponed yesterday due to rain in the area. That will be played this afternoon at Wrigley, 1 p.m. first pitch, Darvish versus Sanchez, as the Cubs look to even up the best of three series at one apiece. Lastly, Thursday Night Football last night, it was a battle of winless teams. The Denver Broncos earned their first victory of the year. They beat the Jets in New Jersey 37-28. Chiefs.
I'm going to go through these numbers kind of quickly here, and then we'll listen to Carl tell me, well, I'm all wrong, and I'm all looking at the wrong page, but the which he does every month.
You know, you would think you'd have learned by now.
I think I would have learned by now, yeah. The numbers are positive 661. That's the establishment survey. The unemployment rate is down to 7.9%. Let me just kind of review where I think we are here. This is the household survey now. We're down. We essentially went from 13.5 unemployed last month to 12.5 unemployed this month. However, we kicked 900,000 people into the column of we don't know what they're doing. So the actual number of people not working for whatever reason didn't change at all.
No. Oh, worse than that.
Well, okay, but let me just finish real quick. One more number.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of people that I have working in the household survey is about 300,000 more than the last month, according to this thing.
This is a really nasty report. Okay, the headline number doesn't sound so terrible, right? I mean, you know, plus 600, right?
Carl, how do we lose 700,000 people? There's the population, then there's the civilian labor force. The population
right.
is pretty much the same as last month. Actually, it went up 200,000 people. How did we get 700,000 people less in the labor force? How did that happen?
Well, that's the problem. Actually, it's more than that. If you look at the unadjusted, that's the adjusted number. If you look at the unadjusted number, we had about 1.1 million that left the labor force. That is, other than April, May, that is a high for the series going all the way back to 1999.
All right, I'm going to say something here that I think is true. You can tell me if it is. The idea of the definition of somebody who's unemployed is somebody who is out of work and looking for work, correct?
Correct.
Now,
correct.
I think that is my theme for the last 2 years has been incompetence in government. Back in the day when I got laid off from Pullman, they didn't care. Pullman, they didn't, because I got a job in a month, so I didn't really have to do it. But you had to sort of report in and let people know that you were still looking and that, those sorts of things. But how strict they were on that, I think, has probably been an issue the whole way. But now I understand, Carl, somebody's told me, that they short-circuit the thing, and once you're, quote, off unemployment benefits, they assume you're no longer looking, and they basically truncate their study into whether they're sending a check or not. Is that true?
Mostly there's some surveillance, because you've got the household survey that they do every month. So there's some ongoing surveillance, but in terms of actually trying to keep track of people who roll off the, you know, you get a check every week rolls, they don't do a very good job of it.
So the week, what happens the week that I don't get the check anymore? I roll from unemployed to the we don't know what you're doing column, I think?
No, you're still considered unemployed, but then the math gets fuzzy as to when do you go into the not in labor force number.
Yeah, that's what I'm missing.
Okay, so it's not automatic, but because they do track long-term unemployment, which is, you know, of course, once you're off the I get a check rules. But like I said, the math on it's a little fuzzy. The tracking is a little fuzzy. I'm not sure that I don't trust a lot of the numbers that come out of the BLS, but which is why I use the unadjusted stuff, because their adjustments are fuzzy beyond stupid. But here's the really bad, this is the bad news. So the 12-month rate, okay, which, you know, we talked about last month, which is basically, okay, employed this month versus employed a year ago, right? So that takes all the adjustment nonsense out, because, you know, Christmas happens on the same day every year. That number actually decreased by, what do we got here, 100,000 from last month to this month. All right, now that is a step backward in absolute employment, and that's not adjusting for the population.
that's just taking the gross number of employed. When you take the population adjustment, it's even worse. Then you got a number that is closer to a neg 200. So yeah, this is a really nasty report. This actually shows, what I see in here actually shows firing, net firing.
Well, that's what we've been talking about the whole show.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, what we got here is net firing. And coming into the election, you know, remember the old saw, no incumbent president loses if the economy is improving in front of the election.
Right.
Okay? He only loses when the economy stinks. Well, you just got the first hint of the smell.
Well, the number, the gross numbers that I'm looking at here from really all of last year and up to February till now, pre-COVID and COVID, we're basically down 11 million people working, and they're somewhat evenly divided between unemployed and we don't know what they're doing. Is that fair?
Right. Yeah. But see, here's the thing. This month, September, is usually a decently positive number on the unadjusted figures. And yet, we're down 100 from where we were the last two Septembers. The last two Septembers were 662 and 652, respectively. It's quite stable. And yet, on an unadjusted basis, we're 572. So we're down 100, which is exactly what we're seeing in the year-over-year numbers. And the problem is that means that whatever recovery we were making, it's over.
I would agree with that.
And we're now going backwards, not by a huge amount, but if we'd been starting from a stable base, we would have printed a neg 100 this month.
Carl, one of the you know, unfortunate themes of the show is just general incompetence for some reason of our people we pay, let's put it that way, or not even going to work now. But I get my census. The reason why I'm leading in with this is, well, Maddie was fine. Maddie got his, went online, did it, and nobody's bugged him. I got two of them. I went online, I did it. They said, okay, they gave me the receipt. We'll never bug you again. I've gotten two more last-ditch things in the mail, and a guy actually came to my house. So I don't know if I'm counted five times or no times at this point. Now, I don't know how the hell you do a household survey these days without home phones, pretty much. How good... I mean, they're the same every month, so there's a trend to them, I know, which is always your argument, but on an absolute basis, how good are these numbers?
Well, I don't know how good the sample is. I mean, that's always the question, right? Because if you have a garbage sample, then whatever you come out with is going to be junk. You know, I had the same sort of thing happen. I originally filed the census before I moved here, when I had both houses. So, you know, I got the thing in Florida, and the thing says, you know, where you're going to live on April 1st. That's where you should file it. Well, on April 1st, legally, my residence is in Florida, so that's where I filed it. About a month ago, there was a nice lady banging on my door here at the house in Tennessee, and you know, oh, well, you know, you didn't file a census. Well, of course I didn't file a census. I live in Florida. You know, it took her 15 minutes to figure out where the screen was for he doesn't have to answer the questions on her little handheld thing.
Oh, good. So, Maddie, would you agree that if there's any guy that deserves to be counted twice, it's Carl?
Well, you know, I could have done it because she was trying to get me to, and I kept telling her, look, you know, I mean, even though it might be to the advantage of my local community to do that, I did give them my count, and it was, you know, as the supposed law required.
Hey, I have a question for you, two questions, actually. I assume, I mean, being the law-abiding soul that you are, that you've gone and gotten your Tennessee license, and now you're a full resident of Tennessee. Now, even though you were counting the census in Florida, I assume you can vote in Tennessee and don't have to send an absentee back to Florida.
Oh no, absolutely no. I actually, the interesting thing was that unlike Florida, the DMV was open right after the lockdown was lifted, and I went over there and no mask, no BS. It took me about 10 minutes. And by the way, it was the most pleasant experience I've ever had at a DMV, which is scary.
Really?
It took 10 minutes, and I was in and out of there with the license, and then I went over to the courthouse and got the titles and tags switched. It literally took maybe 2 minutes.
Well, just so you know how Illinois politics are, most of the DMVs are disasters. I mean, the whole world is
well aware of it. I used to live there, remember?
Well... unbeknownst to many people, and I can say it now because I don't think it's there anymore. There was in the Orland Village, whatever, you know, village offices. The Secretary of State had a little spot in there where you could sneak in there and get your driver's license,
right,
and get your plates. Which talk about no harm, no foul. I mean, you walked in, two or three older ladies, been there forever, very pleasant. Took you 2 minutes, and since the mayor of Orland has been basically telling Jay what an idiot he is for closing all these places when he shouldn't have, and he was not going to enforce it and stuff. I think Jay yanked the Secretary of State out of there to punish him to his people. Do you believe that?
Yeah. Oh, I sure. I mean, you know, when I lived in Chicago, though, I had to go stand in that silly line down the Daily Center, you know, in the basement,
God,
where they've got the DMV office.
Yeah, what a zoo there. Hey, I have a question for you. I was going to ask Lou yesterday because one of the listeners sent me a question, and I should know the answer, and I didn't. The census, when is it finalized, and when are the states notified whether they've got less or more representatives, and when is the map going to be good for 2022 or 2024? When does it become effective? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so there's currently a court fight going on over that because the administration essentially attempted to terminate it when it normally would, which would be basically now. And the left screamed that, oh, COVID means you can't do that. We didn't get everything. And so there's a war going on. But it doesn't affect this election, but it absolutely, the redistricting absolutely will happen prior to 2022.
Is there no balance whatsoever of sampling? In other words, if because of COVID, nobody opens their door or the mailmen don't work, suppose Illinois shows up with, you know, 20% less population. Well, we know that isn't true. It's probably down 2%. I mean, I remember in college, the statisticians will always tell you that the statistics are way more accurate than the census. Is there any kind of adjustment to the census, or it just is what it is?
No, by law, it is what it is.
But how sloppy is it? I mean, the guy came to my door, and there's four units in the building, and didn't go to anybody else's. I mean, how do you know where they even go?
Well, they're, you know, in theory, all of the, I mean, the theory, anyway, behind this is that while there will be undersampling, the undersampling is normally distributed, therefore it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to tell you whether or not I believe that. Okay. The data that goes into the BLS, the BLS table, population, you know, employable population, workforce, things like this, that has adjustments in it. But the actual census, by law, the census is a count. And if you didn't count it, it don't count.
Right. So if you were a college statistician, which maybe you could be, I couldn't, this is the story, the party line is that we know we're screwing up, we don't exactly know how, but we know we're doing it evenly across the board, so don't worry about it.
I think that's, yeah, and you know, there's a lot of screaming. It's one of the reasons that you had all these ads from the different groups and everything, you know, make sure you answer the census, because, of course, nobody wants to be the group that gets undersampled, right?
Right.
You know, differentially. Now, if you're undersampled and everybody else is undersampled, then there's no foul, but if there's a differential, then yeah, it could hurt you.
In terms of how that kind of stuff works, how slimy? Well, here's a question: how slimy do you think these people really are? What I'm thinking about is, I have Maddie and I know some people from our local watering hole, the Tripoli Tap, that are involved in board education and so forth. So we actually get numbers that probably aren't all that public of how much follows each student to every high school in Chicago high school. A couple of years ago, it was like 16-8. It was like a big number. It's probably...
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it's probably like 17-something now. But I don't know. I mean, just say it's probably higher than 16-8. But it's all... That's why all these commercials and everything are done to get you there the first day of school.
Right.
All right, so the... now, this year, from what I understand, with this, you know, remote... There's like 6,800 kids they haven't even... They can't even find. Now, there's money that the state doesn't have to send to the city. Now, 6,800 times, you know, 17 grand is a real number.
Yeah.
Do you think the state is doing some of this on purpose? They don't have to pay?
You know, I don't know, and it was interesting because when I lived in Florida, I had a very good friend of mine whose daughter was just, I mean, whip smart, okay? And they have this program down there where you can do what they call collegiate high school. Basically, you go to the community college for your high school, and you end up with both a diploma and, if you pass, an associate's, which means you basically get a two-year degree for free.
Wow.
I there's no other better deal anywhere on that, right?
Yeah.
So the problem is the program of study is unbelievably rigorous. I mean, a huge percentage of the kids can't hack it, and they fail or they drop out and go back to the regular school. But if you can pass, you're smart enough and you're dedicated enough to do it, it is a screaming deal. Well, every single one of the people, the counselors, the teachers, everything else in high school, did their level blankety-blanking best to talk her out of it. And until I started digging into it, I couldn't figure out why. And the reason is $9,000 went right over to the community college. She left went there.
Well, you can see, my whatever, I won't say family doctor, my guy I've had forever, he did the Northwestern, I think it was a five, where he did the undergrad and med school together and shaved a year or two off. How much money is that, for God's sake?
Well, a lot. And so, you know, the game that colleges like to play, which was going on even when I was of that age, is that they'll find some way to screw with the schedule so that your four-year program becomes a five-year one.
Well, University of Chicago, when I was there, of course, there wasn't that much money back then. But you could do, business school is two and law is three. I think you could get a combined degree in three if you wanted to.
Well, good luck with that. And, these days they do everything in their power to make that not happen.
Well, I mean, for me, I could have, because of my economics degree undergrad, University of Chicago, you still have to take 20 courses, Kyle. You can't weasel out. If you go to DePaul or some other place and you say you passed out of accounting, instead of taking 20, you got to take 16. Well, Chicago, no, you still got to take the 20. But that's how I ended up with all my classes with Friedman and Stigler and those guys. I had 11 electives. I took them all in the economics school. But I could have taken them in law school, in which case I'd have had a half a year of law school. You know,
that's the thing is that if you're a smart person, you can find ways to game it that might work. But the university does their level best to game it the other way and hose you.
Well, it was a lot different when my 2 years was, and this, you know, I graduated in 76. My 2 years are now cheaper than one course of the 20.
Right. Oh, I know. I wrote my own checks when I was in high school. I took a couple classes at community college because I only needed 2 credits to graduate from high school my senior year. And, you know, that's what I get for doing things in advance. But the problem with that was, you know, of course, I had to pay for it, right? Because nobody's covering that. You know what? It really wasn't very expensive.
Well, no, but the overhead they popped on this stuff, and I'm going to talk more about the market here because it's now down 57. The overhead, they had, most full-time people went to campus. You know, and what's the overhead on campus? It's been there for 100 years, right? So they got a couple of buildings, and it was easy to take electives. And it was fine. And the building downtown was the 190 building, which I took one summer. It was horrendous. But, I mean, it was functional. And it was more functional in the winter because they have air conditioning for the summer. That wasn't so hot, but, well, it was too hot. But now they're in, like, some tower. And they I think they closed the thing on campus. So even if you're living in Chicago, instead of going over to campus, parking your car for nothing, and walking over there and being able to take your electives and the economics or the history school like I did, you have to go downtown to this ivory tower place where they got to be paying through the nose. I mean, what's the purpose of that, Carl? I mean, just to prove you can or what?
Oh, yeah, I think so. It's, you know, the game, at all levels, this everything has gotten so corrupt and so packed full of extra BS that, I don't know where the value is anymore. I have to say I'm rather interesting in the market response on this report. I mean, like I said, the internals are terrible, and yet when you look at it, yeah, okay, it's down a little more than it was, but it kind of looks like a sawtooth. You know, there's a little wedge forming here. And you didn't really get a violent reaction in either direction.
Well, we already had, we were down, Carl was talking about, we were down 45. We were down 50 when I came in, 50, 51, 52.
Yeah.
And then we were down 45. This is with the president report of coronavirus. We haven't heard that. And the wife. And Mike Pence and his wife were okay, allegedly. So then this number came out, which is bad. But the unemployment number, these guys, I'm sure they're all talking about how the unemployment number is down, how good that is. They never say about people who've left in the other column. The unemployment, you know, the funny part, Carl, the first class I ever took in economics was at Notre Dame. Davidson was the guy's name. The first day he said what a horrible number the unemployment number was and how nobody should ever look at it. And here it is 50 years later. And people
are still are, right?
They're still looking at it. Yeah, nothing's changed. Anyway, so what do you think from here? I mean, obviously, can you bite a dip with this double dose of bad news here? Or what? I think the president's going to be fine. So on that part, if I was a dip buyer, I would buy the dip. But what about this other stuff? I mean, you and I just said, you basically confirmed exactly what I was saying the first hour of the show. I think things all of a sudden are starting to get worse, and we better do something about it. It's kind of the theme.
I think the real problem is not, you know, I mean, I don't think either Trump or Melania are going to actually die of COVID, okay? Among other things, he's probably doing the things that everybody should be doing that governors have said you can't do and, you know, pass their executive orders to stop you from using interventionary therapies, which do work, by the way. Every study, if you actually look and read the data, it says that they do work if you get it early. The thing is that the bottom line, though, is it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
When you get to, I mean, what powers the stock market? Earnings. What powers earnings? Well, people buying things. What powers that? Their jobs. And the month over month, like I said, if you take just the annualized month over month, we actually lost 100,000.
Yeah. Is this
that is a terrible print for a September, because the normal September print is like plus 400 or 500.
Last question. Do you think Melania takes this opportunity to off him and blame it on COVID?
Oh, boy.
She go back to New York and get out of the White House, which I'm sure she hates. God.
Anything's possible.
Carl, take care of yourself, bud. Thank you for the stuff. SP Futures down 53, NASDAQ Futures down 256. Back Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.